Healthy Alternatives. Both research and real-life experiences are making it clear every day that our traditional medical system and practices need to be rethought, revised, and recharged in light of a more holistic approach to health. Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz, host of Healthy Alternatives, has been a pioneer for 36 years in stress management and optimum health. With a Ph.D. in holistic health sciences, a law degree, and as the author of 8 books, all focused on health, stress management, and performance, Dr. Teplitz is uniquely qualified to help us explore and incorporate healthy alternatives into our daily lives. He is a professional speaker and has shared his wisdom with over 1 million people. Join him to reach your highest level of health and wellness. Now, here's Dr. Teplitz.
Welcome to Healthy Alternatives. This is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you're listening to WebTalkRadio.net. What Healthy Alternatives is about is the idea that most of us want to reach optimum health, optimum wellness. You want to feel better, live longer, and enjoy life more. That's what we aim to focus in on with what I share with you on the show every week. Now, every week, I also like to begin the show by talking about an issue or concern you should know about because it can really have an impact on you. This week, I'm going to jump into a controversial area, and that's the notion of mammograms for women. A couple of years ago, the 16-member U.S. Preventive Services Task Force said that annual mammograms weren't necessary for women under age 50, and that screenings were recommended only every 2 years after that, and there was a major eruption that occurred from that. If you start looking deeper at that eruption, it came from cancer advocacy groups, it came from surgeons, radiologists, there's some money back there that you need to be aware of in making the decision, and there's also an option out there that's even better than mammograms. So part of, I think, the whole eruption that occurred was because people thought there was no other option. So let me first focus in on the money side of the equation. It's been reported back in a 2008 report that breast cancer screenings is a $2.1 billion a year business, and it's projected to be growing at 5.4% a year as the baby boomers start needing regular breast cancer screenings. Now, this caused centers that focus on mammography, magnetic resonance imaging, MRIs, ultrasound, to start spending hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars on new breast radiology equipment. The thing is that these effectiveness of mammograms is not great, plus you've got a danger of actually causing cancer from a mammogram. Here's what's going on. Mammograms miss a third or more of all breast cancers, and it depending on the composition of the breast tissue and the type of cancer that may be there. In addition, and this is a report that was reported in Medscape, that mammograms and then MRIs and biopsies can actually cause cancer. For mammograms, you're talking about radiation risk that accumulates over time. With the biopsy, lumpectomy, you're talking about a scratch that can cause cancer cells to crawl into the wound and proliferate. And so you're also talking about when you're doing a mammogram, you have to, in effect, compress the breast, and that can rupture cysts that can also release cancer cells. So that's one side of the whole equation, that there's a real danger there. The part that got lost in the dispute is that there's an option there as well, and that is by using something called thermography. Thermography was actually approved by the FDA in 1982, and some recent studies have shown that it actually has a 94.8% level of accuracy, which is twice the effectiveness of mammograms. And so the problem at the moment is insurance and Medicare don't pay for it, and the FDA has been dragging their buns to look at making this the primary one of the primary devices you can use for screening for mammograms. At the moment, it's designed as an adjunct to a mammography. So it's extremely safe. There's no radiation. You're looking at the heat images that are coming off the body. And not only that, you can actually use it to detect inflammations on all other parts of the body as well. I've actually had thermography done for me just to look and see in terms of possible infections, because I was having some issues with my mouth, but told them, you know, go ahead, do the upper body. And it was actually fascinating looking at what was revealed with it. So that's my concern for you to be aware of, that there's an option to mammograms. You don't have to get caught in that treadmill, but you, at the moment, you will have to pay for it yourself. Today, I'm going to be talking to Brian Post. He's an internationally recognized psychotherapist. He works with children that have severe behavior issues. And for the past 15 years, he's been focusing towards the challenges facing adopted and foster children. What he has developed is a new love-based understanding that can transform the most challenging parent-child relationship. We're going to be talking to Brian in a few minutes. If you want to know more about me, Dr. Jerry Teplitz, you can click on the globe on this page or go to teplitz.com, T-E-P-L-I-T-Z.com, and you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. On my website at teplitz.com, if you click on the home button, you'll see that you can actually sign up for a monthly e-newsletter, that goes out once a month. It has tips I don't report here on things you can do from a health, nutrition, wellness standpoint. So if you'd like to get that, you can go there and take a look at that. Every week, I also like to talk to you about a healthy breakthrough, its new discoveries, and the latest information about healthy alternatives you can use for yourself, your family, and loved ones. Last week, I started by looking at what can you find in your pantry that you can use to actually help you heal. And I talked about a number of things: red grapes, fish, krill oil, ginger. Today I want to talk about four others. Cherries. Cherries have pain-fighting power. Department of Agriculture study had participants who ate just 45 Bing cherries a day for 28 days, they reduce their inflammation levels significantly. A Johns Hopkins study with rats found that the key ingredient in cherries, which is called anthocyanins, in effect, it might protect you against arthritis pain. A research that was reported by Baylor Research Institute in Dallas showed that a tart cherry pill improved functioning, reduced pain in more than 50% of osteoarthritis patients over an 8-week period, and that cherry juice actually reduced muscle damage among exercising men, and that their pain scores dropped significantly when they compared it to the scores of those who did not drink the juice. So cherry juice should be on your list, or at least eating Bing cherries. Second is soy. Soy can cut osteoarthritis knee pain by 30% or more. You'll need to look at consuming 40 grams of soy protein daily for 3 months, so it takes a while for it to come into play, probably 2 to 3 weeks before it starts taking effect. And it slashed patients' use of pain medication in half. So soy, and you can get that in tofu, soy milk, burgers, edamame. There's a whole bunch of ways that you can get that. Turmeric is a seasoning that comes from India, and they've been finding that it fights the pain of rheumatoid arthritis as effectively as ibuprofen. Not only that, it seems to inhibit the destruction of joints from arthritis, and that's according to research that was at least done on rats. So at this point, use it as one of your seasonings. Last one is something that most people have all the time, and that's coffee. caffeine that's in coffee anyway. If you notice, caffeine is in many over-the-counter cold and headache medicines because it actually enhances the effect of common painkillers like aspirin and acetaminophen. But caffeine also has its own pain-lowering powers as well when it comes at least to exercise. A moderate dose of caffeine, about, that means 2 cups of coffee, will reduce post-workout pain by 50%. It seems to raise the pain threshold, making it easier to keep yourself exercising and working out harder than you would might otherwise do. So that's our breakthroughs that you could just go to your pantry and pull them right out and use them as a healthy alternative for yourself. Before I bring on my guests, I'd like to pause for this message.
Every one of us is under stress from work, family, the economy, layoffs, the inability to retire. These are the realities today. Even if you're doing okay, we all have friends and relatives experiencing hard times. Hey, just watching the news can make you nervous. Make no mistake, there's nothing benign about stress. It can lead to high blood pressure, digestive problems, difficulty concentrating, and increased risk of disease. That's why Dr. Jerry Teplitz wrote the book Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. He presents easy, effective techniques to reduce stress, eliminate pain, relieve insomnia, and gain an overall sense of well-being. Managing Your Stress is fully illustrated and provides hands-on, proven methods you can use immediately. Dr. Teplitz knows how to cut to the chase. He begins working with you from the very first page of Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. Click on the cover that you see on the WebTalkRadio.net page in front of you and buy it now. It comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee, and it will change your life.
My guest today is Brian Post, an internationally recognized psychotherapist, lecturer, and best-selling author of more than 25 books, DVD, and audio programs on how to work with children that have severe behavior issues. His primary focus over the last 15 years has been geared towards educating others about the challenges facing adopted and foster children and how a new love-based understanding can transform the most challenging parent-child relationship. Brian, welcome to Healthy Alternatives.
Hey, thanks, Jerry. I'm glad to be here with you today.
So I've got a question for you. Since your work in the last 15 years has been aiming at, in effect, adopted and foster children, does what we're going to talk about apply to all parents?
100%. Not only does it apply to all parents, it applies to all levels of relationship, whether it's husband and wife, child, sibling relationships, parent-child relationships. It's human behavior.
So what you're saying is husbands sometimes act as children and the wife needs to take care of them too?
We say that in a joking way. Science says that in times of stress, some adults have the ability to regress to infancy. So actually those tantrums that we as husbands throw are actually biologically, neurologically based.
What do you mean, fella? What tantrum?
Exactly.
So what makes your approach, since you're saying it's a new love-based understanding, what makes your approach to traditional parenting what you'd call a healthy alternative?
Well, here's the bottom line. Our traditional approaches to parenting, and if people will look at this closely without feeling threatened themselves, are based in fear. They're based in fear, shame, and control. And I like to think globally. If you think of the way our world is today, we live in a pretty crazy world. And the reality is that the children are our future, which means we were someone else's future, and their behaviors towards us helps in creating the world we live in today. So those fear-based parenting experiences and behaviors that we've passed on from generation to generation have continued to create an increasingly stressed out world. And so a love-based approach is what we have to take when it comes to raising our children if we want to change the outcome of our futures.
So why are you seeing this needed now versus other times historically?
It's been needed throughout history. It's so difficult to achieve because parenting from a place of love does not guarantee you the same illusion of control and safety and security and being a good parent as as love-based parenting does. See, when you're parenting from a love-based place, you got to practice understanding. You have to practice awareness and acceptance, and you have to have faith. And see, fear isn't about any of those things. So it's more important now than ever, but it's only because we've never done it in the past.
Now, my observation is that kids get raised by their parents, and the parents have beliefs and values and stuff that they're imparting. But for a lot of kids, they rebel and go in the opposite direction. Like, I grew up with parents who were World War II generation and Depression generation, and then we became the flower power. Approach. Kids who are growing up today, who some of them are growing up in very fundamentalist-oriented backgrounds, they may be going in another direction. Are you finding that? Does that tend to be a pattern that you see? You know, in other words, what we think the kid's going to grow up to be ain't what they necessarily grow up to be.
Well, and that's absolutely true. And the reality is that we rebel because we end up growing up in emotionally suppressed homes. Sometimes we grow up in physically suppressed homes, and we are all striving internally. We all have that seed that we're trying to develop, and we're trying to let blossom and become what it's supposed to be. But when we as parents operate from the perspective of fear and control, we are continually trying to suppress our children so that they will be what we think they need to be, rather than allowing them to become who they are supposed to be.
There's a notion I heard long ago that it's kind of like looking at a parent, not as a parent, but as kind of a guide who's got responsibility for guiding.
Yes,
the
absolutely.
Child, as opposed to demanding.
absolutely, and that's really hard when we are conditioned for fear and control. And let me give you a quick example, and I'll just use a very common parenting technique, which is timeout. You know, as soon as the child starts acting out, you send the child over to the naughty chair, to the naughty corner. But see, the reality is that time out does not create any emotional security for a child. It doesn't create any understanding. It doesn't cause the parents to have to be aware and pay attention to what was causing the child to act out to begin with. So my approach is to say, instead of doing time out, do time in. Because children don't act out for attention. Children act out because they need attention. So bring the child to you for 5 or 10 or 15 minutes, however long it takes. And then you create emotional security for the child that way.
So in some respects, isn't timeout kind of more for the convenience of the parent, not to because they're time-pressed? And so to do what you're saying, to draw them in, takes time.
Timeout
is a
convenient parenting tool, but you know what, Jerry? The reality is that timeout is no different than sticking your nose in the corner, which is no different than having to go sit on the dunce chair when you act out, which is no different than having to go to jail for 5 years because you did something you weren't supposed to do. It's all on the same continuum, and nothing is different, and if we look at all those things, we know that none of them ultimately make a difference.
So there are other common practices that happen in parenting nowadays. Can you talk about some of those as to how they don't work from your standpoint?
The most common one, and this is really scary considering how far we've supposed to have advanced in our world, but the most common one is spanking. Parents still continue to hit their children without realizing that spanking is an act of violence against from one person to another as an attempt to control and to force one's will according to what another thinks is right. And that's probably the biggest one. The other ones are the consequences, parent-formulated consequences, and that's when the parent gives the child a consequence based on some behavior the child has had. That's a really big, popular one. And the other one, then another one is a point and reward charge. Like a lot of times on the nanny, she'll go in the home and she sets up the point charts for the parents, and they give the kids stars and things of that nature.
So even that's not a good thing, is what you're saying, in terms of because isn't it rewarding the positive side?
What it does is it sets up a dynamic of fear, because if the child doesn't do good, what happens? The child loses a point. if the child does good, well, that's all fine and well, but what happens when you have a child who is in an environment that is stressful, an environment where there's no emotional connection, and the child is acting out because of environmental and relationship circumstances? So essentially what happens is the child ends up getting punished because they don't have an adult willing to connect with them. They don't have an adult willing to create relationship with them.
So in this time we're in with all the stress that the parents are under, maybe losing a house, losing a job, and actually some of the research says even if you didn't lose your job, if other people you work with lost it, you actually potentially have more stress than the folks who lost their job. So it's like a lose-lose going around. So how does that parent who's on a tight end stress-wise call forward the resources to be a more loving kind of a parent that you're talking about?
Well, I tell you, this is where it's hard because we don't understand stress. If that parent understands that they are stressed and that stress is the biggest culprit to creating insecure relationships and creating drama and trauma in relationships and in homes, then we can begin to take that understanding and say, well, look, I've already lost my job, so we know this, and the people who have more stress than the person who's lost their job, the reason they do that is because they are now afraid of what may happen. So there's the unpredictability factor that causes stress in our brains. But we have to realize relationships are the single most important things. And for parents, you know, you've still got to go out and try to make a living, and you've still got to go out and get a job. But those relationships in your home are what are going to allow you to be the most effective and the most successful of anything else, of any other foundation. I mean, that's the foundation of support.
And in somebody going in that direction, what would be a first step that they need to take in terms of if they've been spanking or timeouts or stuff like that? How do they start switching over?
The first thing I would have them do is to sit down at a table and write out on a piece of paper how their parents parented them. John Bowlby, who's the father of attachment, says we mother the way we were mothered. I say we parent the way we were parented. So until you develop more consciousness and more of an understanding of the way you were parented and how it made you feel, then it's hard to make those changes. So by sitting down and writing that out or talking to someone about it is a real first step. And then second to that is to start paying attention to your own stress and fear reaction. We have two primary emotions, love and fear. 98% of the time, we are motivated by fear and not by love. And that's a big thing that has to change also.
Let's come back to that in a minute, because what I'd like to do is remind you, you're listening to Healthy Alternatives with Dr. Jerry Teplitz on webtalkradio.net. And we'll be back with my guest, Brian Post, in a moment and continue talking about a love-based understanding of parenting. Be back in a moment.
Improve your golf game today. It's absolutely possible using the DVD Par and Beyond, Secrets to Better Golf, from stress management coach Dr. Jerry Teplitz. Par and Beyond is a revolutionary new concept that yields immediate results. You'll experience the difference the very next time you play. Even the golf pros love this method. Randy Taylor hadn't placed in a tournament for 8 years, but just 1 week after taking this seminar, he came in second. It's not just in your swing, it's in your head. That's why TNI Golf Magazine calls Dr. Teplitz a headmaster. Par and Beyond, Secrets to Better Golf is available on DVD. You can get it by clicking on the Par and Beyond cover on the webtalkradio.net screen in front of you. You'll learn new, powerful techniques that will instantly improve your game, whether you're a pro or a duffer. This is your new secret to success on the course. It's a totally different approach, and it comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. And don't tell your golf buddies. You're about to become a winner.
So my guest today is Brian Post. He's an internationally recognized psychotherapist. He's a lecturer and best-selling author of more than 25 books, DVDs, and audio programs that look at how to work with children that have severe behavior issues. Last 15 years, he's been focusing on working with the challenges facing adopted and foster children. And what he's developed is a new love-based understanding of how you can use this concepts that we're starting to talk about in a even if it's a challenging parent and child relationship. So you were talking about a couple of things that a parent can start to do, including look at their stress. Are there other things that the parent can start to look at in terms of handling, putting those emotions in check, the fear that they may have?
Well, one is learning how to slow down and take 3 to 10 deep breaths. I always encourage parents, so when your child is acting out, I ask them to do 3 things. It's called reflect, relate, and regulate. So reflect means as soon as your child is acting out, as long as they're not at risk of harming themselves or someone else, the first thing you have to do as a parent is stop and breathe. Take 3 to 10 breaths and ask yourself, how do I feel? As you're doing that, you move to relate. Relate is breathe in, ask yourself, how do you feel? Once you've got a good grasp of how you feel, you say to your child, I'm feeling really upset right now. How are you feeling? Well, a lot of times a child's not going to know how they're feeling, so the parent can then say, because they're in touch with their feelings, I'm feeling really upset, and you look like you're feeling really upset. Tell me how you feel. That is relating, and as a parent can reflect and relate, regulation, which is the ability for two people to be able to reach a state of calm with one another, starts to occur automatically.
Let me ask a question, because you said a child might not know how they're feeling. Let's go in a slightly different direction and talk about why a child would lie.
Oh, that's a good one. And it's such a common behavior. The significance of lying that we fail to understand a lot of times is that lying is based in fear. There's a little part of your brain called the amygdala. As soon as you feel stressed or as soon as you feel a threat, your amygdala reacts with stress hormones and with fear. So as soon as a parent says to the child, did you take the chocolate chip cookie, the child immediately has a stress reaction. And when the stress reaction occurs, the child moves into survival, which means all the child can do in that moment is to lie, which is a survival mechanism. Well, see, we've spent generations, decades, looking at children as lying as a form of control, as a form of manipulation, as a form of defiance, as a reflection of us being bad parents. So that stresses us out when our children lie. So essentially, in that moment, now you have two really stressed out people.
Yeah, the way I describe how the amygdala works is that it's a big hard disk drive that has all these files on it when we've been threatened in the past. And as a child, if you got punished for taking a cookie, then that statement comes up and in effect your ears send the signal into the amygdala. It finds this disk search of finds a file that says, when you told the truth that you took the cookie, you got whopped.
Yep.
So the response then goes to the fight or flight mechanism, and the kid actually doesn't have a choice.
That's right. That's perfect.
That's how they're going to respond.
That is perfect. That is absolutely correct. And to that same point, the parents tap into their same hard drive, because within their hard drive it says, if my child is lying, that means I've done a bad job as a parent, and oh my gosh, that's scary, because that means I'm a bad child and I'm going to get in trouble too. And now you've got two really stressed out, scared, in survival people.
What do you think about the tendency going on where more and more kids are spending more and more time on electronic stuff, you know, computers and iPads and phones, and are ignoring going out and playing with other kids even, or going into nature? What do you think the impact of that's going to be, or is?
I think it's going to be significant. I think we're looking at the beginning of a loss of relationship, human relationship and connection. I don't think we can say children are not going outside or they're not going out in nature. I think as parents we have to take responsibility. If we let our kids play video games all the time, if we buy them the $50 video games and we don't interrupt them because we're so busy in our stress, we use the video game as an extended pacifier, then that really, that's our fault. You know, we're not taking away the video games and taking our children outside. Our children don't know how to go outside because we haven't taught them how to go outside. You know, when you and I were growing up, you know, TVs were just kind of coming around, and then you got TVs, but still yet, parents made kids go outside, or a lot of parents didn't even have a television. So kids had to go outside and do some things, and they did a lot of things with their parents, and that just doesn't happen anymore.
What about the kids who are going outside, but they're going outside for a specific structured activity like soccer and baseball and stuff like that, as opposed to, you know, kicking the can around and just hanging out with their friends and letting the creative side happen? What's your view on that, and what's going to happen out of that type of approach?
Well, I think that actually the children who are at least having the structured engagement, and a lot of times that involves adults, I think that is really good, because at least they're getting that relationship exposure. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't tend to be more emotionally healthy of the children that are coming up. I think it's excellent when children can get together and kick around the can, like you say, kick the ball out, throw the football around in the street like we used to do. But the reality is now is that children have lost so much relationship in their lives from within their homes that now when they get outside in a little group with all their other kids, they're also stressed out. They end up doing things that are more stressful, like drugs or acting out sexually or stealing or things of that nature. So it actually becomes worse. The physiology of peer interaction is the exact same as the physiology of stress. So when you have kids who get together and there's not adult interaction and involvement, engagement, and supervision, then those children could potentially be in a lot of trouble.
Now, you're in a situation, a parent, where the kid is in the grocery store pulling all kinds of stuff down as they're going by in the cart, and the parent is looking to spank the kid to stop the behavior. What should a parent do in that situation that would work better?
First of all, what they should do is limit the amount of time they even have that child in the store. See, a child who is behaving like that is a child who is demonstrating to the parent that being in the environment of the store is more than they can handle. So they haven't learned how to maintain their stress response. And so the parent should limit that interaction and that time spent in the store and build that up over a period of time so the child can develop a tolerance for all of that sensory stimulation. Now, if you already get in the store and your child starts acting out and, you know, is stressing you out and they're obviously stressed out, the best thing to do is to either stop and really connect and see what's going on with the child, try to understand what's going on, or pick them up and leave the store and wait until things are better before you come back and try it again.
Now, when you're talking about single parents, though, who are going into a store and they've got a shop and they've got all the other things on their list, how can they pull off some of that? That kind of, 'cause you can't really just not shop because you got to shop.
Sure, that's and so then what you have to look for is you have to look for the times when your child is in the best possible emotional place, number one, and you also have to understand what it is about the store that's so overwhelming to the child. And because of our sensitive neurologic systems, the reality is the parent could be stressed going into the store, which automatically creates stress for the child. And then for a parent who's got to help their child develop a tolerance, then they go in and they buy a few things and then they leave, you know, or they go shopping when their child is at school, or they go shopping while their child is at daycare, or they go shopping before they go to work, or they go shopping during their lunch break. There's all kinds of alternatives and possibilities and solutions when we don't think from a perspective of fear.
So you talked earlier about the notion of consequences, and can you explain that a little bit more?
Absolutely. We have been inundated with this conditioning that we all learn responsibility through consequences. If children don't get consequences, then they don't learn responsibility. But the reality is that consequences is not what teaches us responsibility. We learn through modeling. 80% of learning occurs through modeling. And so if you give a consequence to a child, essentially what you are doing is you are modeling to the child not how to be responsible. You are modeling to the child how to be reactive, because a consequence is a reaction to an action. So what we end up teaching children by giving them consequences, and I want to make a distinction, is that is how to be reactive, not responsible, how to blame, how to shame, rather than taking responsibility. There's a difference between that kind of consequence versus a natural consequence. A natural consequence meaning you close your eyes, you walk into a busy street, you get hit by a car. That's a natural consequence. But what we've learned are formulated consequences. And there's a difference there. Those do not teach responsibility. They teach reactivity.
And Brian, you have a special offer for our listeners today, a parenting package.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us what it is and where they can go to get it?
Absolutely. Because I know that these ideas are so different, Jerry, and that there's just not a lot out there, even though I've been teaching this for the last 15 years, we put together a really awesome little offer. It's called our Healthy Alternatives for Parenting Package. You get a webinar called Stress Model 101. It's helping you understand children's behaviors differently. You get a copy of my Love Revolution Parenting Journal, which is a journal that I send out every month. You get a copy of my How to End Lying ebook, as well as 3 hours of Q&A audios I do with a group of parents in my inner circle every single month. You can get that for $20 for your listeners on the show. And if they'll go to Post Institute, that's postinstitute.com/healthy, H-E-A-L-T-H-Y, parenting, they will be able to get that system. So that's postinstitute.com/healthy parenting, $20, and that's going to get them well on the way to start to beginning to do things differently in their families.
So if you would like to explore further the whole notion of a loved-based relationship with your kids, you now have the place to go. Brian, thanks for being a guest on Healthy Alternatives.
Jerry, thanks for having me.
My guest next week is Ruth Kent. Ruth started out as a nursing assistant in a nursing home when she was 16 years old. She got very excited about the medical profession. She became an RN. She worked in orthopedics. She's now been in for around 36 years in the ICU in Asheville, North Carolina. She works with open heart surgery on adults and infants, trauma, transplants. But she's also gone in a different direction. 15 years ago, she became a certified Nikan Wellness Consultant. A couple years ago, she became a certified Emotion Code Practitioner. She is now looking at the notions of both the regular medical side of the equation and the integrative side of the equation to really give you input as to how you can be, how you can feel better using both sides of the equation. You're not going to want to miss this one. This is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you can find out more about me at teplitz.com, or you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today for Healthy Alternatives. For more information about Dr. Teplitz and his availability for speaking engagements, please click on the globe on the webtalkradio.net page in front of you, or go to teplitz.com. You may also follow him on Facebook and Twitter by using the icons on the page. To find out more about his books, please click on any of the book covers you see. Eat well, rest well, take a breath, get some exercise, and we'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Healthy Alternatives.